Yeah, obvious, we got a problem here. And it's more than just Alvin streaming Punisher. When life begins to suck, who's reporting it? Luckily, got two friends who you won't forget. Coming live, Alvin and friend on survival. Laughing nonstop, case drops on a cycle. Louder than intrusive thoughts off an iPhone. How they make the world seem bright with the lights off? AFs, it might as well stay up. Lies being told like that dinosaur BS. Magnifying glass to the ground if they don't see us. Having the time, roasting your favorite pizza. Bougie ain't an option, it's the way. Take it to the grave, add moving to the place. You already know when they take the case. Laugh the pain away, it's affirmative murder.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity True Crime Comedy Podcast. I'm Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans.
Oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Yeah, man, I'm the mailman. Can't you tell, man? Gonna post it.
Fran, what can up? You hear my drops? You can hear my drops?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Fran, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. There is this guy, I don't know if you've seen this on social media, on Twitter, actually.
Uh-huh.
You know,
X.
On X. Yeah, sorry, on X.
Don't get us sued.
I was kind of bummed out because I wanted to, you know, make a little trip to New York, but Marcus Garvey's grandson is out here, like, terrorizing New York. I don't know if you know
Flatootie
who...
Oh, Flatootie or whatever this guy's name is?
Skabooski. I don't know if you know who Skabooski is.
Skabooski Marcus Garvey.
Yeah, Marcus Garvey's grandson. He's out here running around and terrorizing and
punching
assaulting...
Well, he's punching white women,
man.
Yeah. So you could still go, in theory, you could go to New York. He has been apprehended, thankfully. That was a crazy couple of days where every time I get on TikTok, it's just some new white woman walking down the street with a lump on their head, like, I just got punched in the face. And come to find out, it was one man, Skabooki Marcus Garvey, who was apparently well-known. He's one of those, like, Hebrew Israelites yelling at white people on a box of apples in the middle of the street type of guys. He's kind of notorious around the New York area. And he would just one day woke up and decided to just go around committing serial punching.
Right.
Thankfully,
he looks like Kevin Durant. He looks like Kevin Durant.
Yeah. Dark dimension Kevin Durant. Very evil Kevin Durant.
Yeah. He walks around talking about, you know, Marcus Garvey. And they go, who? I don't know who that is. I don't know who Marcus Garvey is. Sorry, I don't. You must be mistaken.
He was a black Panther. He was a member of the Black Panther Party.
He was okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Is that really his family member?
Hey man, we're all one people, friend. I don't know. He's black. Marcus Garvey was black. It's possible, but I don't think he could point it out on a family tree if you really, you know, put the pressure to him. Like how are you his grandson? So
I
that
thought
would
it was
be,
funny. I just thought it was hilarious. Like who introduced themselves like that? But enough of that. Anyway, I'm doing fine. But I mean. What's going on with you, man? How are the living conditions? How is your day by your day to day going? You know,
reporting live from a cardboard box.
homeless. Yeah.
Things have changed significantly since the last time we recorded. Last I spoke with you guys and Fran, I was announcing I was having a child. Things were looking up and bright, and the future was looking amazing. Woke up to the craziest news ever in life, man. The footage of the Key Bridge collapsing. Prayers to every family that's affected by that. Prayers to the construction workers that were on the bridge that night at 1:30 in the morning out there trying to make some money. And the whole bridge gets hit by a ship, the Dali. The whole bridge collapses insanely. And the reality is that I sit here before you talking to you solely as a podcaster, a dream that I've had for some time. I didn't think it was going to come this way, but my multi-hyphens are gone right now. I used to be a longshoreman / podcaster. As of right now, I am solely a podcaster because my entire industry is shut down at the moment. I don't know when that will be remedied, but for the time being, I am a jobless bum. I'm joking, man. Life's fine. Life goes on. We adjust. You know, we're figuring things out, and the show must go on. But, yeah, man, it's crazy. Yeah. What did you think when you saw that shit?
I was woken up out of my sleep. And it was kind of, it reminded me of the feeling I had when Kobe Bryant passed. It gave me that similar feeling when I was like, when somebody told me the news and I couldn't believe it at first. It just sounded unbelievable. I'm like,
yeah, like sound like a hoax.
You go what? where you go, like, the person that's telling me this, I know it's serious, but, like, you, if you're not serious, don't joke about no shit like that. about shit like that, right?
That's not funny, like, man. That's not funny. Right, the bridge fell. Get a better joke. You're like, nah, for real.
Right. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. So then I went to sleep, and I'm like, okay, I can't go to sleep now. This is, like, 3 in the morning now. Like, I can't go to sleep. So I hop on X.
Oh, so you found out the news, like, when it, you were awake when it happened?
I was asleep. When it happened, I was awoken.
You found out.
And
like,
I was
okay, gotcha. Right, I get you.
Because Steph goes to work at like 4 in the morning.
So this was
before she left the house. So this is like right when it happened. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go back to sleep. And then I couldn't go. And I was like, fuck it, I'm up now. So now I'm up at like 4 in the morning, whatever it is, looking at my phone. And was like, when you hear shit like this happen, you go, I usually get the idea was like, that shit usually doesn't happen here. That crazy shit like that usually doesn't happen that close to home to me for some reason. That's what I always think of.
Yeah.
But for it to be like down the street, you go, what the hell? The whole bridge fell? And then you think about how many people go across that bridge a day? And I'm like, was it like mass casualty? Like, what's, I don't, and my head is doing all this, trying to figure out a whole bunch of shit. And I'm like, what the fuck? Then you see the video and like, that bridge is like a paperclip, man. It immediately was
insane.
Like, a snap of a finger, gone. And I didn't even think about it. I knew it was the shit, but I didn't even think about it being from the, you know, that it could impact you and your livelihood of, you know, making a living, you know, being, you know, coming to a screeching halt. I didn't even think about that.
It's been interesting for sure. I don't have any updates for anybody who has asked or DM'd me other than work is done for a bit, you know? So that gives us more time to podcast, man, and do what we love and passions and those things. And, you know, I can eat HelloFresh sponsorship food, you know? So it's all good, man. Now this is when you really find the silver linings for positivity to focus on your passions in life, you know. So it's all good, you know. It's all good, friend. But it was shocking.
It is still weird because like I know the kids and like Steph's parents, they went to some spot where you can go. Like a lot of people go to Fish where you can kind of see the wreckage from that spot. And it's weird, like, the boat is, like, still there. This is, like, a couple days after the episode. The boat is still sitting there. You had pieces of the bridge still poking out of the waters.
It looks like a set from a Michael Bay movie. Like, it's Transformers or something. It's insane.
That's crazy, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, man. But, you know, hey, man, we persevere. You know what it is, man. We pivot now. And we adapt, and it'll, you know, we'll be all good. We'll figure it out. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to get into some fucked up shit. So stick around. Affirmative Murder is brought to you by My Life in a Book. With Mother's Day right around the corner, I just know you guys are thinking about a truly special gift for your mom. But let me tell you about a pretty priceless gift. MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book that you could pass down from generation to generation, which I think is a pretty awesome memento to leave behind. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. Your mother or the mother can either type her response or record her voice. MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It would be like preserving her voice and her stories for all of eternity. Your mom's giving you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give her a way to share them. I'm in the middle of my MyLifeInABook.com journey, and I'm really excited to see how it turns out. I've been asking some pretty thought-provoking and funny questions, and, you know, I'm excited to see the response, but I'm also just excited to have the physical book in my hands and know that I can look back on it in 20, 30 years. The interface is super user-friendly. The questions are super easy to set up. It's a breeze of a process. So what I need you to do is check out MyLifeInABook.com. That's MyLifeInABook.com. And use code AMP. That's A, M as in Mother's Day, P, at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for the mom in your life this Mother's Day.
One more time, that's mylifeinabook.com. Use code AMP for 10% off today.
All right, and we are back. Fran, this week we have an interesting affirmative murder. I told you off air, in a lot of ways, I said this guy kind of reminds me of your dad. He just reminds me of your dad. We can get into why he reminds me of your dad as we go on, or we don't have to. We don't got to put Mr. Raj on blast, but he's a smooth guy. This guy, Lance Herndon, is our affirmative murder this week, and his smoothness reminds me in some ways of Mr. Raj. And I'll also differentiate as to why it's not Mr. Raj as we go on as well. But let's get into it. So in the early 90s, a native New Yorker named Lance Herndon had moved down to Atlanta, Georgia, and earned a reputation as a rising star in business. His computer consulting firm, Access Inc., was earning him million-dollar contracts with notable clients such as the City of Atlanta itself and National Bank, which is kind of like the big chain bank of Atlanta.
Mm.
He was even presented an award at the White House during the Bush senior administration, where he was praised for his business acumen. So this dude was like a hot shot, like Forbes 30 under 30 type of guy. He was like a wunderkind, if you will.
Yeah.
Lance's status as a major player in the Atlanta business scene was further cemented when the then Atlanta mayor, Bill Campbell, chose Herndon as one of the city's business leaders to join him on a trade mission to South Africa in 1995. So at 41 years old, Lance appeared to have the world, as well as Atlanta, in the palm of his hand. Now, although on the surface, Lance Herndon seemed to be a smooth business mogul living his best life in the A, those who knew him personally had a different perspective. Lance had recently gone through his third divorce in the early months of 1996. Herndon's three divorces could all be attributed to one of his two biggest weaknesses. Lance Herndon loved women and would often be seen dealing with several women at a time, even while married. And Lance also loved to spend money on himself and the women he was dealing with. Now, there's a word for this in the Urban Dictionary, Fran. It would be called a trick. What I mean by trick is he liked to spend money on women instead of being charismatic. Now, this is where I say I differentiate him from your dad. Mr. Rogers is a player. He was not out here. You know, he's not out here. Lance is like, I'll spend. It ain't tricking if you got it, right? Like, that's kind of, that's the phrase. Like, I have money. And if a woman needs a bill paid or a car payment taken care of, I got them in exchange for their time and us going out to dinner and maybe fooling around a little bit. Which, again, is one form of game, I guess, if you're like a guy looking to date women. That's one way to get women. And again, it ain't tricking if you got it, I suppose, Fran. What are your thoughts on that?
On him being a trick? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, I guess if we boil it down, yeah. Yeah, sure. What, do you disagree? Like, I don't know. Do you think that's tricking?
No.
Showing a lady a nice time and, you know, if you got a little bit of money, no, get her a bag?
Of course not. No, of course not. It's kind of like it's a mutual trade kind of thing going on. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, give me time and I'll give you a little, buy you a car, Mercedes or something, buy you a bag and then whatever. There's no contract. There's no, you know, titles, anything like that.
Sure.
I don't see nothing wrong with that. If he's single and he got money, he's just living his life, man.
Okay. Well, then I guess we have to agree to disagree on him being Chris Angel, the mind freak. I think this guy's full of tricks. I think he's a trick. He's got a lot of tricks in his bag. Now, this is dope, though. See, Lance worked from home, and he had several employees that would access his home office, which was separate from the rest of his house. So his employees could come in. They had access to his office, but the office wasn't accessible by the rest of the house. And he would leave these audio notations for his employees on his desk every morning so that they knew what task to complete. It's something fly and businessy and like organized about, I left your task for the day on the desk, pop it in the tape recorder and just hear my voice tell you exactly how I want it done. I don't have time to be there. So just play the tapes.
Right. Yeah, this Abe is very meticulous.
Yes, very much so.
Very attention to detail.
Yeah, very anal and very like precise and time management oriented. Now, On the morning of August 9th, 1996, one of Lance's employees entered his office, but the voice memos were not on the desk. And as we just stated, Lance had a reputation for being very meticulous, and, you know, this just wouldn't be the case unless something was wrong. The notes, the tapes wouldn't not be there unless something was wrong. He wouldn't just like, oh, I forgot, or I got drunk last night and fell asleep. That wasn't him. So the employee immediately called his mother, who was one of a few people who had access to the house. Because like I said, this employee's in the office. There's no way to get in the house from the office. So his mom had to come from her house, who had a key, and then go into the house part. When she goes upstairs, she finds her son naked in bed, bludgeoned to death, and she immediately called 911 in a panic, reporting that somebody had just killed her baby. Lance was struck in the head with such force that there were blood streaks streaming down the wall. There were no defensive wounds on his hands, and little blood was found below the victim's waist, which led detectives to theorize that Lance was attacked while he was sleeping. There were no signs of forced entry, and there was evidence that suggested that the killer possibly took a shower before leaving. Now, this was also weird but interesting. There were three clocks in the bedroom. They had all been unplugged. To me, which a detective also poses later on in my notes, but when I first read this, I went, that implies to me that this person may have known that alarms were programmed into these clocks and unplugged them so that they wouldn't go off. Because, you know, noise alerts neighbors and people that, you know, if an alarm is going off for an hour and nobody's hitting snooze or something, you immediately think something's wrong. So unplugging the alarm clocks feels intentional and like somebody who knows his schedule. Like a burglar wouldn't unplug alarm clocks.
Right.
So Herndon's laptop was also missing. Now, keep in mind to the listeners, and Fran, I'm sure you know this too, but we could get into it maybe a little bit. Keep in mind that this is not a laptop today. This is a laptop in 1996. I say that to say that people didn't just have laptops in 1996. If you had a laptop, it was a valuable possession. It wasn't just like, oh, I got a laptop in a closet somewhere. Like, I got a laptop under my bed. Yeah. It's an old Dell laptop. Laptops aren't just like willy-nilly in 1996. It was like multiple thousands of dollars, and you bought it to like help you be a business person or do a job. You weren't just using it to go
just a big,
be on YouTube.
This big, bulky looking, small. It's kind of small. The bottom's all big. Got like, there's no like mouse pads, like three buttons and shit.
You don't just have this to play Minesweeper. Like, this is a machine for work.
Yeah, this is an important device that has a case.
Yes.
And the owner doesn't just leave it around.
It's cared for. Like, yeah, it's cared for.
Important shit on it. Right.
Yeah, so yesterday's price is not today's price. A laptop in 1996 is not a lap. I feel like a laptop is almost an outdated kind of thing today. Like, a lot of people have tablets and all these things. Where laptops, you could probably just find a laptop in your house. Like, oh yeah, this is my laptop from 5 years ago. 1996, bro, you got a laptop. It's a prized possession.
Right, and then and because I watched the show about it on Oxygen. It was The Murders of Atlanta, I think it's called. And when they put so much emphasis on the laptop, I was like, why is that so? I get he's a businessman. Oh, it's called The Real Murders of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I get he's a businessman and everything, but I'm going like, oh yeah, this is in the 90s. And because it was just like, the laptop is just so important. He just wouldn't just leave it around, or he just keeps it with him, or the case to be here and the laptop is gone. It's just, that doesn't happen. He doesn't do that. And I was like, he's posting so much on the damn laptop, and I go like, oh yeah, this is the 90s, and this device is probably super expensive back then.
To me, so it'd like, be like if you told me you had the Apple glasses. If you have that, it's not just like, I just take them off when I'm done with them. I throw them on bed. Like, I just throw them. If I got some Apple VR guys, man, I take them off slow. I put them in the case that they come in.
Absolutely.
I put them away in a drawer so people don't just see them out. Yeah. Like, you care.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you have kids around, you're not just leaving it.
That too.
Just hanging on the dresser.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. The floor.
Who
that's
gives
not
a fuck?
Happening.
Like, this is that in 1996. Like, who gives a fuck? I don't give a fuck. Who cares? I'll just buy another one. Like, no, this car, this was an investment.
Yes.
So, the laptop, he had a laptop that was missing. And also, strangely, a bedside table with a picture of Lance's current girlfriend, Kathy Collins, was face down. Like, the picture had been, could have been knocked over, but it looked intentional that the face was down on the table. So Lance was dead, and he had no shortage of scorned lovers or jealous husbands to add to his suspect list, because he was getting around town. His most recent ex-wife, Janine Price, was also a suspect. They had recently divorced, which, you know, obviously she's at the top of the list. But they had recently divorced due to Lance's infidelity. And Lance had a $1 million life insurance policy that listed her as the beneficiary. But Price also had an airtight alibi, so scratch her off the list. But that's a big incentive. So I get why she was, like, top of the list.
I'm sure she probably knew that was coming.
Oh, yes. Especially because apparently, and now he's dead, now you got $1 million coming your way, allegedly. I don't have any further information on that, if maybe but, like, allegedly, you got a phone call coming and telling you got $1 million coming your way. So, yeah, you're on top of the list. As days went by after the murder, the investigation continued to develop, and the medical examiner continued that Lance was killed with an adjustable crescent wrench, which was missing from his workbench. It is believed that the tool may have been readily accessible to whoever was in the house, because just days before his murder, Lance had used the wrench to put together some exercise equipment. So it was just kind of, a hammer, you just used it a couple days ago, you might not have put it back where it needs to go, might be on the table still.
Right.
It was one of those kind of situations. Detectives believe that they were not dealing with a premeditated murder, but in fact, a crime of passion. A former lover and current employee of Lance's named Talana Caraway was able to help detectives establish a window of time for the murder. Talana had left work at Lance's home office around 10:30 p.m. on August 9th, which is super late and a little bit suspicious. Something tells me they might not be just coworkers at this point. But after she got home, the two then talked on the phone until midnight. So, and I guess this is as good a time of any. I mean, it's going to come up more, but this is, I just want to establish my feelings about Lance. See, as I've gotten older, I've realized a lot of things about men dating and how it, a lot of men are the same. And we do one thing that a lot of men do wrong is we sell dreams to women. So I don't think Lance, it's one thing if Lance wanted to date multiple women, the thing to do is you're upfront about that. And then you allow yourself to kind of weed through women that are like, well, I'm looking for this, so I'm not looking for that, whatever. But instead, I think he goes to every woman is like, oh, I love you, girl. Let me buy you something. Let me take care of you. And so each of these women are like, yeah, we're dating. Like, he likes me. I like him, whatever. And in his mind, it's like, I'm a player, man. What can I say? I just keep it super player. But it's like, no, that's manipulative. And I've been guilty of this in my life of dating life as well, where you go, I'm giving multiple girls the girlfriend experience or the boyfriend experience. I'm like, yeah, we go on dates, this, that, boom, take you out, ask you about life, whatever. We talk about whatever. And it's like, but I'm not being honest about the fact that I'm dating other people. That's when you can walk around with that confidence where you go, oh, I want this for my life, and I'm upfront about it. I'm like, yeah, I'm casually dating, and that's just what I'm doing. If you don't like it, I respect it. You go live your life, and I'm going to live my life. When you're telling every girl that they're your girlfriend, that's manipulative. And I think Lance was somewhere kind of in the middle, in between of that. I don't think he just was like, oh, yeah, man, I'm 41, and I got mad money, and I'm just like, hey, girl, you can come hang out, or you can get off the train. I don't know. I think every girl was like, I want to marry you. Let me buy you a car. Yeah. And that's a nasty kind of game. Like, that's nasty. Like, that's just not, you don't get to walk around ladies, man, that's me.
Yeah, it definitely is nasty. But by him having so much money and being, how old is he?
41.
Like 40-ish?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. 41, okay, he's young. And still, you know, in Atlanta, all these beautiful black people around, beautiful women, and he has all this money, and he can kind of sell that dream of, like, you know, look, I buy you a car, I buy you a Benz. I got this big house.
Let me upgrade you.
I'm known in Atlanta and in the business world and stuff like that. And I can look at this life I can give you. And then that alone can gotta, you know, hook a woman on, and they go like, oh, he really likes me. I see myself being with this person and this lifestyle. I love this lifestyle. And then he gets tired of him. Go like, well, I'm done with this. And then kind of jump to the next one and still dragging her along.
Yeah.
And kind of still doing that. And then it gets into the situation as this story where it can get super messy.
And you gotta,
it becomes super dangerous.
If that's the game you play, you gotta be ready to take accountability when these women slash your tires. You know, yeah. Like, this is what I mean. Like, a lot of men that use this style of communication with women are so quick to call women crazy. When it's like,
yeah. You can't just buy her a Benz and you can't buy her a car and then buy her bags and then
ghost
her in your penthouse and then be like, I'm done with this. And she's like, what?
And then don't even tell her you're done with it. Just be like, slowly start acting weird. Don't respond to phone calls. Yep. And instead, because again, that's what I mean. That's the player part where it's like, if you're a player and you go, we dated for a while, I don't want to date you anymore. Then if you're an adult and you really are about all the stuff you're saying, then you have a conversation like, hey, listen, I don't feel how I felt about you. You know, I hope wish you the best in life, but I'm not interested in this anymore. Instead, they just start pulling away slowly, still trying to hook up from time to time, pulling away slowly. And then all of a sudden it's like, when you see me out at dinner with the new girl, I'm trying to make the new you, but I just saw you last week. And we had sex, and you come and confront me at the dinner table at the TGI Fridays. Now I'm like, she's crazy, man. She won't leave me alone. This is a sick game. You know. Yeah.
But to his defense, allegedly he was supposed to call this off.
Allegedly he wanted to call it off, which we will get to.
Yeah.
We will get to, but I don't. And again, I don't know how clear. Somebody wanting to do something, and somebody, if I tell you I want to break up with a girl, but I just took the girl out 2 nights ago, that's very confusing to her. If I die all of a sudden and you come out and it's like, yeah, he was just telling me he was thinking about breaking up with her, but like 2 nights ago, I'm telling her, I told her I love her and picked her up, took her, gave her some flowers. And stuff. It's like, that shit comes out. It's like, what do you mean? I didn't know he was thinking that. And again, I don't know Lance's whole formula, but this is just the kind of guy that I got from him. And it's, again, he was newly divorced. He was 41. He was successful. I'm not faulting a guy for wanting to play the field, but it's about how you play the field.
Right. Yeah. Dangerous game, for sure.
Dangerous game. So, detectives theorized that the murder took place between midnight and 4 a.m. because he was on the phone with Talana until like 12:30. Talana also pointed detectives in the direction of Dion Ba, another woman Lance had been seeing at the time. Ba was a student at Georgia State University, and the two had met at Lance's 41st birthday, which he had at, like, the rooftop bar of a Hilton in 1996. I mean, he was doing player shit, bro. He was living his life.
Splurge,
yeah. He was living it up, renting out Hilton ballrooms and stuff.
A thriving city, too?
Oh, yeah, Hotlanta?
He was getting it in.
This is Hotlanta in 96, too. Like, this is Hotlanta when it just was becoming what people call it Wakanda. This is, like, the gold rush. Right. This is when people were like, man, people are making money down there in Atlanta. Let me move. That's what, he was from New York. He moved down there. It was like a tech boom. But instead, it was like a black boom. Like, black people were going down there, starting businesses, making money, and he got in on that wave. And it was lucrative for him. But like I said, he met Dion at his 41st birthday party, and soon after they started dating. Lance would spoil Dion with lavish presents and cold hard cash, and he even gifted her a Mercedes-Benz. Lance had cultivated an image of himself as a mysterious playboy with bottomless pits of money and a penchant for spreading it around to women he fancied. And that's not, and again, I want to revisit my trick label. Now that we've discussed it a little bit further, you still think he was just having a good time and, like, you know, dating? He was kind of a trick. He was a little Chris Angel mind freak, you know?
I think he was having a good time, man. He's been divorced 3 times, bro. He's like, man, I'm just out here.
He's been divorced 3 times, and I think every time was for infidelity, because he's out here spending money on women while he's married.
Yeah, but he's not married now, though.
But he was doing it while he was married. It's not like he changed up. He was doing this shit while he was married, too. which is worse. Because you listen, if you're having an affair on your wife is one thing, but if you buy somebody a car while you're married, that's you looking to get shot by your wife.
All right. So what are we talking about? Are we talking about him now?
I'm throwing a lot at you. Not married him. We're talking about single him.
We talking about single him. Do whatever he wants. He's come on, man. We didn't have this conversation about LeBron James. Similar conversation about LeBron James.
How so?
Matter of fact, I take that back.
Yeah, what are you saying? Because
LeBron James is a married man. That'll count. That'll count. But he's a single young man. And rich. He's just living his life, man. He's playing to feel like how any young rich dude would do.
Well, 41 isn't that young. You should be having the same game as a sophomore in college. Like, oh, I tell them all they're my girlfriend.
But he's divorced, though.
That's true.
That's kind of the same. He's kind of like a restart. He's divorced. What?
So you get to date immature when fresh off a divorce? I don't know. I'm just following your logic.
I didn't say all that. You putting all these extra adjectives. I didn't say all that.
You have the right to be casual.
Yeah, you got a right to throw your net out there, a little wide net.
That's true.
And kind of see what you catch up. I mean, 41, what? That's still young, man. He's not 50.
It's young
he's
in life, but it's a little old to be like, you know, you're my girlfriend. And this
so what do you want? You want him to get married? Do you want to get married again?
It's a middle ground. We don't got to go extreme. It's a middle ground, bro. We can have a discussion about, you know, I'm seeing multiple people, not just you. I just don't think he was doing that.
You don't think he was telling the people
where's
he was
the
dating,
fun like, in that? I like you and you want to date me. So I'll let you feel like you're the only one. He had a picture. He had a girl's picture on his nightstand. I bet you he has multiple pictures somewhere where every night when he expects who's going to be there, he puts the picture on the nightstand.
Of course he does. Look, man, I know somebody who does that.
Wait.
We don't have to say what it is at this right now. I know somebody that still does that now and has been caught up.
No, you don't know somebody that's putting pictures of different women on a nightstand next to his bed. You don't.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Oh, my God. We'll talk about that off mic because that's crazy. I don't know. That's crazy. Rotating the family pictures in
yes,
the
I do.
Is insane. That's nuts. That's crazy. You hit a button and all the frames flip around like you got a secret license plate on your car like James Bond? That's insane. I don't know who you.
That's what players do, man. That's what the players are here doing, man. That's what the players out here doing. Nuts. Absolutely nuts.
Oh my God.
Yeah, man. So flip the pictures out, man. Yeah. That's crazy.
Oh my God. Okay. So with all that being said about how he wooed Dion, what Lance had failed to realize is that weaponizing your generosity can garner desired results. Like, women will fawn over you because, not trick, but because they know that you're generous, right? But when you do that, you open yourself up to being used. And the reality was that Dion Ball wasn't at that birthday party by coincidence. She knew who Lance was. She scoped him out. She wanted to rub elbows at a fancy event and get next to him because it's like, oh, I heard he spends money. She also neglected to inform him that she was married to a man that was living in Jamaica.
Yep.
So she sold him the dream of, oh, yeah, you know, she was like this pretty, exotic Jamaican woman. And she sold him the dream of, like, we're dating each other and we're madly in love. And he sold her the dream of, I'm going to take care of you and I'm going to get you a car. And they both were playing each other. Now, I think she was playing him more than
fool?
He was because he's like, oh, I have money. I think so? Well, because his game was copy and paste. Her game was for him. That's what makes it different. Like, if he sees a girl that he thinks is pretty and he wants to take out on a date, he's going to buy you something. But she goes, I want him. So she's selling him a Taylor dream. He's just copy and pasting the same dream that he passes around the town.
I don't know about that one.
And by dream, I mean tricking. But we don't have to use that word. Yeah. But
I don't know about that one.
About what do you mean?
I don't know if she was playing the game better than he was. Can't play the player, man.
No, that's true. I mean, there's things that, for sure, she did not have the upper hand a lot of times. But I just mean, by playing, she wasn't just like, oh, I happened to meet this guy and he happened to have money. I had no idea. Now I'm just enjoying the ride. She's like, no, I want to get on this ride. Yeah. So in his mind, he's like, I have money and I don't mind taking care of women. But it's different when somebody goes, they look at you like a mark. If I'm just generous, that's one thing. But when you try to finagle your way into my generosity, that's you playing me. Even if I don't realize it. Even if I don't, I'm going to be generous either way.
I think without him being unaware, I think he's okay with that though.
Oh yeah, because to him it's like, oh, I was gonna do this anyway.
I was gonna do this anyway.
So oh, I'm gonna do it anyway because that's just what I do. That's how I am. So for him it's like, you know, yeah. For him it's like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe she is taking advantage of me, but I was gonna do it to somebody regardless. When authorities interviewed Ba, she claimed that she and Herndon, which is Lance, were madly in love. She also gaslit her husband back in Jamaica into believing that Lance was simply a mentor. I'm not trying to shame him. I really am not. But however, his lifestyle is important for later context. We don't have to get into it right now, but his lifestyle is important for later context. So I just want to make sure I'm not portraying him as just like this guy who, you know, met a psychopath. I just think I think everything is more complicated than first glance. And I think that not the victim blame, but, you know, I'm not saying you can drive somebody to murder you, but we all have to take accountability for the role that we play in putting somebody in a space to have negative feelings towards us. That's all I want to put into perspective. I'm not trying to victim blame or anything like that, but I just want to make sure people understand that I don't believe that he was a good communicator in the type of relationships that he wanted with women.
Yeah.
Mainly because a lot of his relationships were led with monetary gain for the woman. Sugar baby, you can call it. There's all kinds of terms for it. Not to say that they can't like him, but it does make a power dynamic in the relationship. It does create a situation where they might not tell you what they really want to say because they don't want to mess up the situation that's beneficial to them in a lot of ways. It just is a complicated way to have a relationship. And it's not real. But for some dudes, it's like, I don't care if it's real or not. You know it's real. The sex is real. I don't care if she doesn't really like me. And I think that's what Lance was. Like, I don't really like her.
Right. So why are you making it seem like it's a bad thing?
I'm not trying to make it seem like it's a bad thing. My only point is that if that's the kind of life you want to live, then
he's not being a good communicator.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Like, then every woman that you're dating and seeing should be like, I know what it is. And I don't think...
How do you know he's not doing that, though?
Because we'll get to the... Well, here's how I know. Because Kathy Collins didn't kill Lance Herndon. And Kathy Collins had a picture on his nightstand.
That was just his number one at the time. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what you...
Hey.
Would you want this
man
to do?
Hey, then it's just me, man. I don't know. It's me. You're right. It's just been me.
I'm sure that what's her name? Dion.
Uh huh. Dion Ball.
I'm sure Dion had her picture on the nightstand at some point. He was like, poof.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
It's just,
knock it over.
It's your turn.
Put
it's
a new
not
one.
Your
there.
Turn anymore.
Yeah. He rotate. What a sick guy. What a sick guy.
No, a picture in the night, and I need you to tell me who this person is as soon as we finish recording. That's insane that you're telling me you know somebody that's like, oh, shit, it's Thursday. Taking pictures off the wall is crazy. Putting up new pictures? Where do you keep the pictures? That's crazy. You just got framed pictures hidden? That's insane. During their investigation of Dion, detectives also learned that a month prior to the murder, Lance had actually called the police on Dion for allegedly making a scene outside of his home. What was the scene, you ask, Fran? And this is where we get into the conversation about who was playing who and who had the upper hand. So the scene was that he was inside of his house with another woman and tried to pretend like he wasn't home.
Mm-hmm.
She's knocking on the door. He's keeping the lights off. He's in the house, not answering the door. And he calls the police. She leaves. And then she comes back the next morning after being criminally trespassed. And she's arrested for returning to a place where she was criminally trespassed from. Now, again, Yeah. If you're a guy that's like, I'm a woman, I'm a ladies man, whatever, then you got to be ready to, I feel like any man who really is that would have an understanding with women that like, no, this is casual. Like, you don't get to. Now if somebody's just crazy, that's a different thing. But I don't think it was crazy. I think that this woman, Dion, really was like, I'm going to go see my man tonight. And then I show up and there's a woman in the house. I don't think she just was like crazy, and because they continued to see each other after this incident. So that tells me he called her and was like, my bad, girl. And said a bunch of sorries and it won't happen again. And he didn't say, hey, I don't want to see you anymore. I'm seeing somebody else. Because that's, then she's in the wrong. But the fact that he kept seeing her after that tells me he got caught up in a lie. Do you see what I'm saying?
No, I get it.
Okay, because I'm like, that's, if you're, it's not player to be like cowering behind the door, acting like you're not home. There's nothing like, I'm a player and women, I just get women and I understand women. There's nothing player about that when you're telling another woman and I was like, shh, be quiet. Stop talking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
The player is like, listen, you know, we can come in and have a discussion. This is Cheryl, you know, and Cheryl, this is Dion, and me and Cheryl are having a nice night. And, you know,
ain't nobody doing that. Ain't nobody doing that. That's bullshit. That is bullshit. Nobody's doing that, man. Don't even put that out there. Nobody's like, oh, Tracy's here. Hey, y'all, just come in and introduce him. Hell no.
I'm not saying introduce him friendly, but I'm just saying, like, hey, man, listen, we're having a night. You need to go home. That's what I'm not saying.
Nah,
come on and have some s'more.
It was Friday night. He wasn't expecting her to come until Sunday.
Yes.
And he got caught up.
Yes.
He got caught up.
Exactly.
He did get caught up, yes.
So she gets arrested, but she bonds out or whatever. She's able to get out. And they continue to see each other after this incident, like I said. But people close to the situation, as we, you know, joked about earlier, people close to the situation said that Lance actually wanted to end things with Dion, while Dion did not want to end things with Lance. However,
Also, Lance didn't bail her out, by the way.
Right. So you're saying that was him sending the message? Even though when she bailed out, they still continued to see each other. He's like, well, I didn't pay for your bail.
Or he was just like, it's a free night without worrying about her.
Yeah, like, so I know where she is, so I don't got to worry about her showing up to my house. It's crazy. Okay. Yeah. She's so crazy.
I'll bail her out when I'm ready.
Yes.
I'll bail her out when I'm ready to see her again.
So the word in some of his friend circles is that he wanted to end things with Dion. However, like a true mind freak, he continued giving Dion a weekly stipend of money and gave her full access to the Mercedes that he gave her. So she's still driving around the Mercedes. He's still dropping the deposits off in the bank account. But then he's going over to his friend's house and be like, man, you know, Dion's just so crazy, man. I can't keep dealing with her. I'm about to cut her off. And then all his friends are like, man, you're such a player, different girl every week. And he's like, yeah, you know how I do. But then he goes home and calls women, you know, kicking his feet while he's laying on his belly and twirling the phone cord around his hand and being like, girl, you know, you're my one and only. And I just think that's dirty macking. Like, that's just a nasty way. It's manipulative and it plays with women's minds. And I just think that's who he was. And I think that a lot of guys.
Giving cash is crazy.
No, it's not crazy. It's tricking, friend. It's tricking. He's a Chris Angel mind freak. Yes, giving cash is crazy.
Buying gifts, I get, but like
dropping giving off straight like up weekly cash, like go ahead and pay the car, go ahead and pay the light bill. I got that.
That's crazy.
So yeah,
I guess that's how you keep him around.
That's how he keeps him around. That's exactly. That's, you know, and listen, I can respect that, but you don't get to go around trying to make it seem like you're this like ladies man player. You're a trick. And I think he liked the idea of people seeing him with women on his arm, a different woman every week, and not really knowing the full script. They're like, man, it's just, he's just so rich and famous and whatever. And it's like, oh, these women have a pretty good arrangement. Like, they're all getting like allowances and cars. And
oh, so you think none of these relationships are like the women actually liked him?
I think that everything has two sides to it. I think you can really like this guy and like going on dates with him and everything like that, but it is also a financially beneficial situation. I'm not saying they're just like, oh man, Lance is calling me again. He might be a blast. They go out and get fucking Hennessy Ritas and eat the best steaks in town and, you know, open up the finest bottles of wine and they have a great time.
But also, I'm not, but I might not feel like seeing him all the time, but I'm going to see him even when I don't feel like it because I need that money. And I could be fully wrong about all this, and these are just women who are like, I've never done a sugar baby type of shit in my life, but a guy's like, I'll give you $1,000 a week. Who the hell am I to say no to that? So, Dion was brought in for questioning. And what's interesting is Dion Ball was actually initially approached by detectives just hours after Lance was found murdered. But she claimed that she was in the shower when they knocked on her door and they eventually left. It's also important to note that during a search of her home, Lance's laptop was found in her closet. But she claimed that he gave it to her as a gift, a raw laptop with no case stuffed away in a closet. As we've discussed, this is a 1996 laptop. So I think that's a little bit fishy. Now, back to that initial night, because there's some interesting stuff that happened that night. So the initial night where Lance was murdered, they went to Dion Baugh's house, right? So according to her neighbor, Dion said that she had been in the shower when authorities knocked on the door. And then, you know, so that she didn't hear it. And then they left. But then she immediately went over to her neighbor's house to ask what the, like, why were the police here? Were they asking questions? I was in the shower. So she tells her neighbor that. Like, I was in the shower. I didn't hear. I didn't know if they knocked on my door, too. But what'd they say to you? Now, her neighbor goes, I found it kind of hard to believe that she was in the shower because she was wearing a full business suit, had dry hair, and was in full daytime makeup. But she's saying, like, oh, I must have just missed the cops. I was in the shower. What'd they say?
Terrible liar.
Yeah, right? So Baugh then got in her car and drove away. Her neighbor notified the police that she had just left, and they went to Baugh's home to wait for her return. Baugh returned home and then reportedly collapsed and got hysterical after allegedly learning of Lance Herndon's death. But according to police, she had no tears. So again, this is all the night that Lance Herndon was murdered. She avoids them, drives away for a little bit to try to give him some time to, like, go away. But the neighbor calls and is like, yeah, she just left, but she'll be back. She comes back. The police are there waiting for her. And when they tell her that Lance Herndon is dead, she goes, has a full-on scene. So much so that she can't answer any questions tonight. She's just too hysterical to answer any questions. So it's like, you caught me in the shower. I didn't hear you the first time. Now I'm back. Oh, my God. What? Lance is dead. Oh, my God. I can't even talk words. Come back later. In her interview with police later that afternoon, and in a subsequent videotaped interview at the Roswell PD 9 days later on August 17th, Dion Baugh denied knowing anything about Lance Herndon's death. She told authorities that she had driven her husband and daughter, who had been visiting from Jamaica, to the airport on the evening of August 7th and then returned home. So her alibi, because Lance Herndon was discovered on August 8th. I might have said 9th by accident. He was discovered in the morning of August 8th. So her alibi is, on August 7th, I was busy driving my husband and my daughter to the airport. And then I was too sad. She said he called me to ask me to come over, but I was like, no, I'm too, you know, I just dropped my family off. I don't really feel like it. Sorry. And that was her alibi.
Damn.
This is where the lies completely starts to unfold even more. So they didn't talk over the phone, and she said she wasn't going to come over. What she said was Lance came over to her house briefly. Between 9 and 10:30 p.m., the night before Lance's body was discovered, and that he brought her his laptop.
The laptop, right.
Which he let her borrow for school. Herndon then left her home, and she didn't see him again, and he died. Now, that conflicts with the woman who works with him, who said that she was at work until 10:30. How could he be at his house and at Dion's house at the same time? It's not possible.
Right. Right. And why would he bring her the laptop? If this is that's so important to him, why would he just be like,
that's what I'm saying. That's why 1996 is so important to, like, I'm going to buy you stuff, but if I'm really buying you something, I'm going to buy you your own laptop. This is my laptop that I do business on.
Exactly. Right.
I'm not going to let you borrow my laptop. I'm going to get you your own laptop. And I'm probably not going to do that because laptops are expensive as shit. Now, he's buying cars and stuff. Right. But we can get into... We'll get into that part a little bit later as well. So despite repeated questioning, Dion Baugh stuck to her story that she never went to Lance Herndon's home the night he was killed. She also maintained that her relationship with Herndon was solid and that she and Lance were truly in love, but authorities soon discovered that her version of events did not match what others were telling them.
So the case stalled for some time until in January of 1998, detectives got the break that they needed. Dionne Ball was in the process of a divorce from her Jamaican husband. And in the mess of all that divorce, detectives reached out to her mother-in-law, who no longer had any allegiance to her because she was getting divorced from her son. And the mother-in-law revealed to the detectives that Dionne had allegedly admitted to her that she had in fact gone over to Lance's house on the night he was murdered. Now, it is important to note that there was no murder weapon found. There was very minimal DNA evidence found other than like a couple of strands of hair. And he had some DNA under his fingernails that belonged to Dionne Ball. But they were intimate together at points in life. So it wasn't unusual. Although people close to him would say he wouldn't have DNA of women under his fingernails. They say this guy showers 4 or 5 times a day. You know, he probably wouldn't even have a woman's hair on his bed because he's a guy that cleans the sheets and all these things. But again, there's a photo of another woman on the nightstand. So if we're to believe that this was a spontaneous thing, Dionne just showed up at his doorstep. He hadn't had a chance to swap out his pictures and change the sheets and all these things. Then I guess we could believe that. Now, with all these things adding up, Ball ended up being arrested and charged with malice murder, felony murder, aggravated assault, 2 counts of theft by taking, and financial transaction card fraud, because he was missing stuff besides the laptop, credit cards, jewelry. So she got charged with a lot of things.
She's trying to clean. She's trying to clean him out.
Yes. During trial, prosecutors asserted a theory that I do believe most of this. Obviously, we'll never know everything, but this just sounds very plausible. So they asserted a theory that Dionne had spent the night with Lance. And in the middle of the night, she went downstairs to get a drink when she noticed that her court date was not on Lance's schedule. You see, Lance had allegedly told Dionne that he was going to go to her court date and get the charges dismissed. Basically, he could show up and say, yeah, I'm the one that criminally trespassed her, but I don't want to do it anymore. And we can just drop this.
Yeah.
But again, as we said, he's a very meticulous and anal guy. If it wasn't on his schedule, allegedly, now this is all hypothetical, but if it wasn't on his schedule, then he probably hadn't planned on going. So, like, you made the joke about he didn't bail her out. It's like, yeah, you can come over here. We can have sex. Like, we have fun in bed or whatever, but, like, I'm not going to fucking court. I told her that, but I'm not going to go. You know, who gives a shit? I don't care if she gets arrested. She shouldn't have showed up to my house messing up. You know, she's scared. She scared off that girl I was seeing that night. But you can still come over and I'll have sex with you or whatever. I'll still give you the money and you can keep the car, but, like, I'm not going out of my way for you. So she's in his kitchen in the middle of the night, sees his calendar, sees that he has no plans to come help her out the next day. Cause it's in this hypothetical, it's like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever. So later on that day, she has court and he has no plans of going. So when she sees this, she goes into a rage because he's not, you know, he's lied to her. You know, he told her he was going to come help her out and he lied to her again after getting her arrested. This is her fault. It's his fault. She got arrested in the first place because he was messing around on me and called the police on me hiding in the house. So now in there, what they're saying to the jury is she went into this jealous, angry rage.
She couldn't ask, though.
Well, you know, it's the middle of the night. He's asleep. So in a rage, allegedly, she grabbed a weapon, which would have been the wrench, the crescent wrench, went upstairs and beat Lance to death in his sleep. After she killed him, she took a shower to wash off the blood, then took some jewelry, some credit cards, unplugged the alarms because she knew his schedule and knew alarms would go off eventually. And prosecutors also asserted that she left with the laptop that night. And that's how it ended up in her closet.
Right. I'll take the laptop, though.
I mean, it's valuable because a laptop, again, a laptop in 96 isn't a laptop today. I don't think she had like nudes on it or sent him, you know, explicit things or things that she didn't want people to see. Maybe emails, but I don't know how common email was in 1996. So again, I'm thinking of a lot why would you take a laptop? Well, if there's incriminating emails or pictures on the laptop, then that's bad. I would take a laptop if I committed a crime in 2024. But in 1996, I don't think a laptop was functioning the same way socially as it is today. I think
it was a business laptop. I don't think he was hiding anything on the laptop.
Yeah, so I just think she's like credit cards, jewelry, a fucking $8,000 laptop, however much a laptop cost in 1996. Wait till the heat died down a little bit, get $4,000 for it, or however much, half of a, you know. That's a come up. So, on April 17, 2001, the jury found Baugh guilty on all six counts. Meanwhile, while the jury was deliberating, defense lawyer Geer Quinn made a motion for a mistrial, charging that the prosecutor, Clint Rucker, was not licensed to practice law in Georgia. This guy almost fumbled the bag in the most embarrassing way possible. So the defense charges the prosecutor with practicing law illegally, basically, right? It was true that he was, because he was behind on his dues. Like, I guess you got to pay dues to the Bar Association, and he was behind on his dues, which makes you, like, in bad standing with the bar, and he's practicing, he's doing trials. So they were right. But the judge, but the judge was like, even though this is true, if you pay it by the end of the day, we won't dismiss the trial. And that's what he did. Like, he got caught up on his payments, and they were like, it's cool. But again, what makes me so mad about the law is the inconsistency, right? Because I got you. If I'm the defense attorney, I'm like, I got you. Like, I win. You're not in good standing.
That's not my fault.
We did this whole trial. You're not a lawyer right now. And you did a whole trial as not a lawyer. So this should be a mistrial. I remember one time I went to work when I had a job. I went to work and I ran two stop signs. I got pulled over. Now, you know, this is inside of a port, so the roads are different. The cop was like, I'm gonna give you a warning for the first stop sign, but the second stop sign, I'm giving you a ticket, the points.
How you run two?
Cause it's like fake. I don't know if anybody has a job where you work inside of like a contained place. I don't follow traffic laws, and I'm not stopping at all the lights. I'm like running through lights, and it's just not like a real place. This isn't a real. You're not expecting to get pulled over by the police. This is a contained facility. But anyway,
that's how it is. That's how it is at the airport, though. Like really strict, though.
But I didn't. It's not. It was years ago. I wasn't expecting it to be strict. I wasn't expecting to get pulled over. But because he said I'm giving you a warning for the first stop sign, and I'm giving you a ticket and points for the second stop sign, my mom was like, "Well, he gave you points, so you got to go take it to court to get the points with taken away." The second stop sign was obstructed by a container. So I go to court. I put my little suit on, or not just like a dress shirt and a tie. And I go, I watched a couple Law and Orders and stuff. I'm like, Your Honor, you know, this is just some miscarriage of justice.
This man was prepared.
The stop sign was obstructed by a container. So when I ran the container, it was because I couldn't see it. The cop's right there. He goes, well, yeah, there is a container right there. So that is true. There's a container right there. So I'm like, case dismissed. In my head, I'm like, got him. Like, you just admitted it, you dummy. I got you. I felt like fucking Matlock or something, you know? And then the judge...
He's doing his job, but sure.
But I'm saying you just admitted that the stop sign is obstructed. I can't see it. The judge...
Right.
So I'm like, I got him. The judge goes, sir, how long have you been working down at your job? I said, a couple years. He goes, so then you knew the stop sign was there. So points dismissed. You still owe the money. But he dismissed the points. But I'm like, I should have got the whole thing thrown out. So my point in saying all of that is... I got you.
Nah, hold him accountable.
So it's like, I got you. You were practicing law without being in good standing with the bar. This is illegal. Case dismissed, right? And the judge goes, do you have $300 or whatever you owe on you right now? Pay it right now and it's all good. It's like, no, that's not fair. I beat him. That's how I felt about that kind of, because it's like, he did get him technically. Like, you didn't do all the right stuff. That's what you're not supposed to be doing this job right now. You're not in good standing. The judge name was Jerry Baxter. He was like, all right, you know what? Don't worry about it. It's fine. I'm going to uphold the conviction because she was found guilty, right? Like I said, there was no murder weapon, minimal evidence. Everything involved in getting Dion Baugh found guilty was circumstantial. This was not a solid case, in other words. Now, the reason I was kind of harsh on Lance throughout the telling of our affirmative murder this week is because a lawyer appealed. And the lawyer, the law team that came in on the appeal flipped the narrative. And instead of having to defend, initially the first trial was like this woman defending being a crazy ex. The second team came in and was like, this guy was a womanizer. This guy was selling false dreams. This guy was being manipulative and tricking women. And they came at it from that angle. And they muddied the waters. And they really leaned in on, there's no murder weapon. There's no evidence that this woman was at his house other than, like, fingernail DNA under his fingernails, which they have had sex before. That's not crazy. There's nothing here. The jury goes back and is deadlocked, right? On the appeal. So on the second trial, the jury goes back after her defense lays out their whole case, and they're deadlocked. As a matter of fact, to be specific, they said that they were hopelessly deadlocked. This was in November 8th of 2003, so just a couple years after she was convicted. The judge ends up declaring a mistrial. She ended up being freed on $500,000 bond because she gets to, they let her be free while she was fighting for her third trial because there was a mistrial. Now, on September 9th, 2004, Bob pled guilty to one count of voluntary manslaughter and was sentenced in the Fulton County Court in Atlanta to 10 years imprisonment and 10 years probation.
That's crazy.
She was released from prison on November 29th of 2011. So,
wow.
So basically she spent 10 years in prison. She was arrested in 2001. She was released in 2004. She went back to prison a few months after that, after her third trial. And then she didn't even go to trial. She pled guilty. She pled guilty to a lesser charge in 2004, and then by 2011, she was free. So from 2001 to 2011, she was caught up in the court system in a case where she eventually pled guilty to the murder in the first place. So that's not really bad. If she did brutally murder this guy, she served 10 years in prison.
You mean if?
She definitely killed him. She confessed to it, right? But I'm saying, When she was found guilty of first, it was like malice murder, all these things, much harsher charges. Now, after a couple of mistrials, because there was not much evidence. So basically what I'm saying is she definitely did it, but
she got off.
And also it wasn't a strong case. I believe that she did it because of all the stuff that we just laid out, but she beat it because it wasn't a strong case. You know, so it's not always what you know, it's what you can prove. And they weren't able to prove that this woman maliciously beat this man to death in some jealous rage. Like, they had to have her plead out to some lesser charge because they kept getting these deadlocks and mistrials. So, you know, I just found...
That's crazy.
Yeah, Lance Herndon, man. Rest in peace. Again, I wasn't trying to shit on this guy, but I just, you know, I think it's important as a guy who is guilty of some of those things that Lance Herndon did in this story. I'm not a trick, but I'm just saying I've been guilty of being like, I tell you this, and then I tell this person the same thing, and I tell this person the same thing. And then I'm like, why are you guys mad at me? You know, I think we've all been there as men, and it's like, honesty's the best policy. And at 41 years old, I would think you would have learned that by now. That was my only point, like, play the field, have fun, but like, let's just keep it a buck with everybody. We're all adults here. Like, there's no need to be, you know, secretive.
He ain't got time to keep it a buck with everybody. He's
too busy being a business mogul.
He don't got time for that.
Well, one thing we didn't get into, which came up during the second trial, was that apparently Lance Herndon was super broke and was he was using a lot of his connections that he had made to take out a lucrative loan from the bank. And was his business was in peril, but he was floating his lifestyle from a bank loan. So that was interesting too. Like, so kind of like the whole thing was a charade. But again, I'm not here to disparage anybody. He's a victim. It's sad.
Yeah, man, don't shit on him like that.
At one point, the business was thriving, but he was kind of living beyond his means a little bit. And why is that, Fran? He was Chris Angel. He was magic tricking all over town.
He looked like Johnny Cochran a little bit.
He was a smooth dude. He was a smooth looking guy. But you can't be living outside your means, bro. And especially when your means are magic tricking, you know? David Blaining, if you will.
Magic tricking.
Yeah, you know, you buying Mercedes.
He was living his life, man. He was living his life.
You can't be fronting multiple rents. Imagine doing that. There's people doing that in 2024. You know how much rent is these days? You paying three people's rents? I don't care how much you got.
That's insane.
It's tricking. It's tricking even if you got it. Yeah, man, but that was the sad story of the young Atlanta mogul Lance Herndon being murdered in his sleep by one of his love affairs that he was having, you know?
I feel like the story tried to paint it as a love triangle a little bit.
Sure.
But it wasn't, though. Where her husband.
Ah, yes. No, yeah. He just was a guy that was getting cheated on, it seems
because,
like.
Because, yeah. Yeah, but they made it, at first they thought it was like,
him?
He came to, when he came to Jamaica, the same night he was killed, they was like, oh, was it him?
Oh, because she put him back on the plane that night, and he flew back to Jamaica the night of, yeah, for sure. I get how they could have tried to frame it that way, but there's just no evidence of that. And also, the husband came forward during this whole thing and was like, one night, just like his mom, he confessed, he was like, one night, she was mad at me, and she was like, you keep talking to me like that, I'm going to bust you over the head like I did Lance.
So,
but that's what allegedly, that's what he says she said. And that's what his mom says she said, that she went to Lance's house that night. It's all he say, she say. Nothing. But that's what I mean. This whole story is so lacking in evidence. But I do believe they got the right person. I do believe Dionne Baugh is the guilty culprit because she confessed. But this is a very flimsy, there's not a lot of strong evidence. So it's almost like you just got to kind of believe they got it right. But I believe they got it right because she pled guilty, which, again, we know we've had discussions before where sometimes people plead guilty to stuff they didn't do because they don't want to deal with the process anymore. Or you're going to get less time than you would if you fought this. So she might have been facing 80 years and they're like, look, we don't want to go through a whole third trial again. Plead out to this and you do 6 years. And it's like six versus go to trial and you do 80.
Take that all day.
Yeah, for sure. So
that's a steal.
You got to still give her the benefit of the doubt on that, but it looks like a lot of the stuff that I read adds up. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true, but it makes sense. But we'll never know the real facts.
That's crazy.
Yeah, super crazy. Fran, I have recommendations corner before we get out of here.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're going to watch the movie, but I would say, definitively, what I'm about to recommend is one of the best movies I've seen in the last 15 years easily. It's one of the best movies I've ever seen, honestly, in my life. The movie is called American Fiction. It's just an American classic like I haven't seen in a long time. Like, it reminds me, not in storyline, but it reminds me of like a Forrest Gump or like such a simple concept for a movie, but amazing acting. Breaks the fourth wall. Like, it's this subtly brilliant movie that I love. I don't really want to get into the details of it because I think people, not that you necessarily need to go in blind, you can watch the trailer and decide if you want to watch it for yourself, not just you, anybody. But I don't want to do it a disservice by trying to sum it up because I can't. I can't make you understand how good this movie and how much it hit me and how funny and real and thought-provoking it was. I can't justify it and give it a quick little synopsis. So all I will say is American Fiction is one of the best movies I've seen in my life, and I highly recommend it.
What is it on?
I watched it on Amazon Prime.
Okay. Free? You got to pay for it?
I watched it free on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And I mean, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. Right. American Fiction.
You know, when you do that, I watch it immediately. So I'll probably watch it tomorrow.
I would love your thoughts on it. I'm conflicted because I think you'll like it, but I don't know. But I think you will. I think a lot of people probably have seen it.
We'll see.
And I'd love to have it. I could talk about that movie for an hour conservatively because it just is so much dialogue and conversation and bigger conversations than the movie in it. And also, the conversation that we had about like the Vince Staples show in Atlanta. This is a movie where it's black people, it's black opulence, it's black generational wealth, and it's not the focal point of the movie. This movie, here's the best way I could describe it. It's like the anti-Tyler Perry movie. It's black people, it's black people being excellent and thriving and being successful, and it has nothing to do with the movie. multiple people in the movie that are black are doctors and successful and they're funny and they're complicated. And
all right, don't ruin it, man. All right,
I'm not
man.
Trying to ruin it. I'm just saying that them being black people with money is not the movie. It just is like,
gotcha.
You know, if you watch a movie with this, I do this all the time. This is my best example that I give all the time when I talk about the kind of movies I like to hope that black people get to make someday, and they are currently making them, is that Home Alone is a movie about a kid being left home alone, right? That's the simple plot of the movie. They live in a 20-bedroom mansion. They are all going to Paris for vacation as a family. The dad bought everybody's plane tickets or something like that, and that has nothing to do with the movie. You don't know what he does for a living. Yeah. If Home Alone was starring Gary Coleman or something like that, you'd have to be like, what? The movie would have to start like, oh my God, we won the lottery. Or like, they just would feel the need to have to tell you why this family has money.
Got you. Yeah.
So in this movie, American Fiction, these people are doing well in life, and it just is not, that's not the fiction of the movie. That's not the part that makes it a movie. Like, black people are doing well. They speak well and they have nice jobs. It just is. And I think that that's dope.
That's just like, it's like, that's what is part of the world in that.
Exactly.
And in the movie.
That this is just a real, it's just a perspective. Like, this is just the perspective of these people. Them having money has nothing to do with the movie. And I think that that's great because we see so many examples of like the hood and struggle and stuff. And it's like, that's not black people's only experience. And I think it's dope when you see a movie that's like, I'm a doctor, but like, that's not the movie's not like, I had to work so hard to become a doctor and my brother got shot in front of me and I became a doctor at the end of the movie. It's like, no, I'm just a doctor. And this is a comedy, you know? So, American Fiction, man. Great movie. Highly recommend.
American Fiction. Yeah. Okay.
What about you? You got anything?
I finished watching The Floor. I finished watching that the other day. I didn't finish it.
Can you believe?
I finished watching that.
I think it's been long enough, right? Like, it's been long enough. A girl with one square, she had like two squares, won the whole thing. She just hung in the cut.
Crazy.
Hung in the cut.
Just chilling.
Stayed quiet, wasn't dancing in the commercial breaks and all this. She was like, I'm so over in this corner, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah.
I thought that was a brilliant strategy.
It was a couple battles where I was just like shocked, where I was just like, whoa, that was impressive. Where it's just like, how did they even know? I think it was like leaves or something. That was crazy.
Love The Floor.
Very impressive.
Love The Floor. I need to get on The Floor. Love The Floor. Fantastic show. I need to get on The Floor.
Yeah, but what else? I think that might have been it. You know what I watched? And this might sound crazy. It might not sound crazy because it's coming from me. For some reason, I thought I've seen this movie and I've never seen it. Was it guessing what it is? It's an older movie.
I don't even want to guess because it could be anything, and I know whatever it is going to blow my mind. So please just go ahead and hit me with it.
I've never seen Beverly Hills Cop, whatever that movie is. I've never seen it.
Beverly Hills Cop 2, nothing?
I've never seen it.
You know there's a Beverly Hills Cop 2 that I think is better.
I thought I've seen the movie, but I was like... Because I just know it.
Yeah.
And I know who's in it. But I was like, oh, I've never seen
this movie. Axel Foley, man.
I thought I've seen the movie, though. I think it's because I was like, I've never seen this movie. I was like, that's crazy.
Well, yeah, it's a great movie, man.
When I saw that
I
movie.
Think the Beverly Hills Cop 4 is coming out soon. Or 3. I don't remember.
Really?
I think it will be 3. I don't know if they made a Beverly Hills Cop 3. But yeah, like Bad Boys 4 or Bad Boys for Life, Beverly Hills Cop 3 or whatever. Yeah, man. These old legends are trying to revitalize these franchises, man. But what'd you think? Did you like it? I mean, it's like a classic movie.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's a great movie.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked
Eddie
it.
Eddie Murphy, bro, just is like, I know everybody's a victim of recency bias and Kevin Hart, and I'm not saying there can only be one, but, you know, all these comedians that do movies and have a successful career, Eddie Murphy was a meteor, bro.
Yeah.
That was Beverly Hills Cop is a blockbuster movie. That movie made a ton of money. Eddie Murphy was one of the biggest stand-up comedians ever, and then he was one of the biggest movie stars ever. Eddie Murphy's one of one.
He was doing it. He was doing it all. He was doing it all, man. He was at his peak. He was doing it, making songs and shit, albums. I was like, no, this dude is everywhere. And I was like, his voice, his laugh is annoying, but But and for some reason I still think it's a bit. I think that's I don't think he really laughs like that. But I could have sworn I saw that movie. But it was, I loved it though. Good movie.
Well, yeah, Beverly Hills Cop. Hey man, folks, check out the new hot Eddie Murphy flick, Beverly Hills Cop. I highly recommend it. I don't want to do any spoilers for you guys. You got to go see this one. You won't expect the ending. It'll catch you off guard. I promise you. But until next time. I've been Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans. And we'll see you guys next week.
Deuces.